Right. Thank you. Sorry. Technology. The business before this committee this morning is basically the three letters which we received from the President. Two of these are extensions. The one dated 13th of July is an extension of the deployment of the SANDF regarding the whole issue of xenophobia. The extension was from 8th of June to the 8th of July. The second letter is the deployment in Burundi and the extension of 1,137 SANDF members from the 1st of April 2008 to the 31st of March 2009. The third letter concerns the employment of seven SANDF members to Uganda from the 15th of July 2008 to the 30th of November 2008. So it's till the end of November this year. Before we approve these troop deployments, the committee did raise a matter at our last meeting and at previous meetings. I did write a letter to the Speaker of the NA and the Chair of the NCOP in this regard, as was requested by the committee. I will ask Rebecca just to circulate this letter. The essence of this letter is that it is so that the letters received from the President is in compliance with Section 201(3) of the Constitution. But I also pointed out that Section 201(4) of the Constitution reads as follows: if Parliament does not sit during the first 7 days after the Defence Force employed as envisaged in subsection 2, the President must provide the information required in subsection 3 to the appropriate oversight committee. Now, it does happen quite often that Parliament is not in session and these employments occur. As a consequence of this letter, I have received a personal notification for the first time. The other concern was which I mentioned was the principle regarding or contained in the constitutional guidelines as well as certain procedural imperatives. According to the Constitution, the President neither seeks nor needs the permission of Parliament to sanction such deployments, as he must merely inform Parliament. The question arises, therefore, what the actual parliamentary oversight role is, and in effect that of the Joint Standing Committee. Does Parliament have the authority to reject such deployment, and if not, it is not an impingement of the principle of separation of powers of the executive and the legislature. It would be appreciated if you provide the committee with your legal opinion. It is also of concern that most of these deferrals, if not all, have a cost implication to the fiscus, and Parliament is expected to sanction them without knowledge of what the relevant costs might be. This places Parliament in an invidious position as it is accountable to the taxpayer. Just lastly, that there is a political political background to most of these deployments, and Parliament does not really know what the relevant facts are, and the question is, shouldn't we be consulted or be informed exactly? I did receive acknowledgement of these letters, but I haven't had any subsequent correspondence. So this is just to inform the members that I did what the committee asked me to do, and I'm awaiting a reply. I presume that the speaker and the chair of the NA did or are consulting their legal people concerning this. I don't know if there's any further discussion regarding this letter. Mr. Sean and the Norma and Dr. Quirno.
Chairperson, I fully support the concerns that you've raised through this letter, which reflects the common views that they expressed on several occasions in this committee. I too find it quite disturbing that the chairperson wrote this letter on the 18th of June and has not received a satisfactory response to this letter. If I may suggest a follow-up, querying, unless you've been informed otherwise, a follow-up letter requesting a detailed response to this letter here, because it is not you in your personal capacity. You're actually articulating the feelings of this committee and, in fact, Parliament, actually. So I think you should not be treated with the disregard that I felt in this matter. 18th of June, your letter was written. This is now the end of August. This is Parliament. And the chairperson of one of the highest bodies in which takes care of the defense of our country is treated in this manner is quite sad. So my request would be that you should do a follow-up letter, because the issues raised are quite pertinent. They are constitutional issues and political issues. So I would support the view that there should be a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Shah. Babu?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm trying to read. I must confess that English is my second language, Chair. I'm trying to read paragraph 3 of 2013 in the Constitution. It says, when the defense force is employed for any purpose mentioned in subsection 2, the President must inform Parliament promptly in appropriate detail. I don't know what promptly means. Now, why I'm supporting the decision of the committee in writing this letter? Sometimes before, we usually got these letters when we were at home, when these things were happening. Before we came to Parliament. It happened before. will receive these letters, that the existing that has happened and so on. And I don't understand why it takes long. For instance, let's see your first letter, Chair, that you read to us, stating which you want us to approve. From 8th of June to 8th of July. Today we are on the 27th of August. Should we really think you are an oversight body on that letter? The answer to me will be no. We just have rubber stamping. Again, if you look at the other one, which is the 1st of April to the 31st of March, again, to me, I really don't understand why. And the last one, maybe it's in within, because it's talking about the 30th of November. Maybe it's within. Now, my problem, Chairperson, is that I don't know why are we being used as a rubber stamp. Because I believe that we should be. I support what the committee said, in fact, that the letter should be written to acquire all this. That's a principle that I support. But someone has to explain to us why it takes a long time. Why it takes a long time? What about if we say no to the first letter? What will happen? Does it have any effect? The answer to you, Chair, no, it doesn't have any effect because it's already gone through. What about if we say it should continue because there are still problems? It has no effect again. That positive and negative of it. It doesn't apply. That's why I have a problem in reading the Constitution together with what your letter has written to. Which, by the way, you put the ANC logo on it, although members of the parliament are not all members of the ANC. I presume that was your mistake, which you should correct it on the logo of the letter, which I agree because you are writing to the ANC chairperson, but don't write to us and give us the ANC because we are not members and we are not subsidiary to the ANC. I'm just saying that in passing as a joke. But I'm emphasizing the point that this is a parliamentary. Okay. Now, Chairperson, in principle, I'm saying there are three points that I'm raising. One, in principle, I agree with your letter. The letter that the committee asked you to write. Secondly, constitutionally, I think we are representing. And thirdly, I hope they will respond to you because we have to compare notes of the Constitution and what they have said to us. The sooner the better, so that you will understand where we are. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for your contribution. I thank your reprimand, but I still remain a member of the ANC, and my letterheads will remain the same. Thank you. Dr. Quernoff? Dr. Quernoff, and then Mr. Diali, and then Mr. Fischler.
Thank you, Chair. Two issues. I think the letter that you wrote to Madam Speaker contains six issues or questions. And unless we have an answer to those issues raised and questions asked, it's very difficult to move forward. So I would support the two suggestions, both suggestions, that by the two speakers, that we follow up and get an answer on the six issues raised. That's number one. Unless we have that, we cannot move forward. That's number one. Number two, let me just go to the time frames. If you look at the letters we received from the President's office, the time frame, the time lag between the date of that letter and the deployment in the three letters before us, the one letter is 5 weeks time lag, the other one is 3.5 months, and the other one is 2 weeks. So there is a time lap there between the letter dated, the letter of the president dated to the speaker, and the date of the first deployment in that letter. So it's a time lag. Secondly, I don't know what is the time lag between the letter from the president to the speaker. If there is a time lag, in other words, where the speaker receives the letter, but she doesn't immediately react on that. And thirdly, what is the time lag between the letter referred to by the speaker to this committee and this committee sitting to approve? So it's three time lags. The letter of the president, first deployment, the letter from the president to the speaker, time lag, and the letter from the speaker to you as chair of the committee, another time lag. We need to determine where the problem is, because if you add these time frames together, we're talking quite an extensive time period of time. So I would ask the committee just to make some research where the problem lies in this chain of flowing of events of as far as time lag. And then we need to address that specific issue on whatever level that is to eliminate that time lag. Thank you.
Thank you. In reply, the chop, the stamp, indicates when this was ATC'd, and the last was ATC'd yesterday. So there's a time lag everywhere, but if you look at the first letter, the date of the letter is the 13th of July. The deployment was from the 8th of June to the 8th of July. Okay. So actually the letter was, the letter came after the de facto deployment. So there is a time lag within the president's office. There is a time lag because when we see this one was ATC'd, written on the 31st of July, it was only ATC'd yesterday, so we can only deal with it today. And there is a problem also to convene the committee. So we had tremendous problems in finding a suitable date to accommodate all our components. So, it is a problem all around.
I agree with you, but the time lag from the date of the letter of the president to the ATC, we need to evaluate where that problem is. Is it with the convening? Because the ATC is 29 July. Today is 27 August. So is it a parliamentary problem? Is it a speaker problem? Is it a committee problem? Is it a president problem? We need to identify ring fence and say, how do we correct that to shorten that time frame? You're absolutely correct.
Thank you. Before Mr. Shah, I first want to give Mr. Diallo an opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. And members, I agree that we should make a follow-up. Chair and members, I think, in my own opinion, that we have left this matter to stretch for a long time before we could think of writing this letter to the speaker. We have let this matter to stretch for a long time. This letter, the president letter, has been issued for a long time, and we did not think of writing to. We were discussing in the committee, but we did not have a concerted mind to write to this. The speaker to explain about this belated letters of the president. It is of course necessary to make follow-up And I want to say again that we did not come to the point of time frame of respond of this letter, because continuously the deployment takes place. Yes, I agree that we don't know now by this time what's happening, what is actually happening when our forces are being deployed. Whether there's any problems, incursions, whatever, we don't know by this time. I do agree that the immediate follow-up should be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Diwali. Mr. Moseki, I'm going to give Mr. Moseki an opportunity, but he also indicated that he has to attend another meeting now. And before he leaves, I would like us to, before we lose our quorum, I would like us just to approve these letters and then maybe continue the discussion after he has left the meeting. Mr. Moseki?
I agree with what other members have observed to be a time lapse with regard to informing the committee. And actually, the proposal made by Comrade Guarano, when you look at this letter, all of them, the deployment of forces happens in June, as an example. The letter is written at the mid-June, and the letter is written to the Parliament at the end of June. There is something wrong. So that alone indicates that at the President's office, something wrong that takes place around there with regard to informing the committee. But again, when the letter reaches the office here, you also realize that there's a time that lasts before it reaches the committee. An example is that if you look at the stem of the letter, I mean the stem from your office chairperson, it says you received this letter on the 29th.
The stamp indicates when it was published in the ADC.
Okay. Oh, I see. So I think that proposal made by Comrade Koronov and also as made by the rest of the members should be adopted by this committee, and as Comrade Nzabu says, your office as one of the offices that is important in terms of overseeing the work of Parliament should be accorded that kind of status. And we agree that follow-up must be mentioned. So thank you,
Mr. Moseki. Before I'm giving Wambene an opportunity, I think we must just if it meets with your approval, just approve these letters. If I can get a proposal regarding the first one, dated the 13th of July. The Shah proposes, Novo, second, no one against, thank you. The one dated the 14th of July.
I propose,
Mr. Moseki, Mr. Novo, Mr. Shah, Kuernoff. And then the last one, dated the 31st of July. Can I have a proposal? Honorable Norvo, Honorable Berku. Unanimous. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Moseki. You're excused, and thank you for your contribution and for attending our meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Fischler,
so
your hand.
Can you come in, sir? Yep. Please, Honorable Fischler. Don't confuse your problem of calling meetings with what we are talking about.
Yeah.
Because that is a separate matter between ourselves.
Yeah.
The unavailability of ourselves because of the busy schedule from the DD, from the DOD, and the SAPS. And the safety and security. Therefore, don't confuse that with these letters. In other words, don't say that I didn't call the meeting because we couldn't call the meeting because the members and so on. Don't don't put that aside, because we are dealing with the letter that's in front of us, which is the principal thing according to the Constitution. Ours here, we can discuss it, how we should call the meeting, how we should communicate, and so on and so forth. That is why Mr. Fisher comes in, I wanted to correct them. You don't have to apologize on that, because we have to discuss this as adults and so on. But here, we are talking about the principal thing, with the constitutional matter. I hope I'm clear on that one.
Quite clear, thank you. I think that is a separate issue, and we deal with that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an internal issue, and we will determine our meeting the best we can.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Fischer?
I think one problem that faces us here is that the question of correspondence and the time limit, what has to be considered is that when dealing with our department, we are not dealing with ordinary citizens, we are dealing with people who carry guns. We are dealing with people where they are, wherever they are deployed. Anything can happen. Accidents can happen. Give you an example. Somebody in this, when they were monitoring that, somebody tried to shoot a soldier and he was shot. So it means that is the danger of the defense department. It means the question of responding to NRT, the agency of the department, becomes very important. So that's why now it becomes, we are worried that there's a long delay in responding. As if we are writing people who are living in Pretoria or who are living in another country. These people are living around us. This department, the speaker, the president, around them, letter by hand can intercept the sector and respond quickly. And because of the agency of the matter, that's me.
Thank you, Amin. Mr. Shaw?
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to belabor the point. I just have something new to say. I don't think it's just a question of time lapse. That could be easily avoided if there is the will or the political will to do so. Capacity when deployments take place, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not something that's unplanned or unprepared. They always inform, the request comes through, the Defense Force knows about it, then they make the preparations and all of that, and then the request is made for the president to sign up on it, basically. So I cannot understand if they said from the 8th of June, planning must have taken long, long, long before that. Especially if it is a case of extended. Extended would mean that they were already there. It was a question of extending. Now they knew the date is expiring. They could timelessly write to the committee and say, we have so many troops there, it's expiring in the next week or so, or 2 weeks. We intend to extend it, the president needs to extend this. Now that is how I would think value would be given to a committee. If I may add, if this is what the Constitution is saying, that the president doesn't have to ask for anything, just inform us and that's 5 weeks or 4 weeks later, I would go as far as saying, in order for there to be an ideal situation where Parliament's authority is exercised, then maybe we need to look at this constitutional clause which allows for such a thing to happen. Really, seriously. In any other country that I know, many countries where there is a vibrant, effective democracy, no deployment of troops or withdrawal of troops, or anything can happen without the sanction of the committee. Serious. So if we really want to be a true democracy, if we really want to exercise oversight, then I think that this clause, in fact, should be looked at, and the committee should be consulted. They can do so. If you're planning to do something, you come to the committee and say, there's a situation there, we have this NEPAD initiative, we want to bring stability, there's chaos situation, these are the financial implications. They must come and tell the committee, and if the committee is comfortable with it, we will sanction it, and then it should happen. That's what joint standing or select committee, defense committees do in democracies in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Mr. Bengu, Dr. Baker.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for coming late. Chair, I think you have to remind us, didn't we sort a legal interpretation of that constitutional clause?
No, the idea was, and we in the letter we are actually asked the speaker for a legal opinion. But we didn't separately sort a legal opinion. If I read the Constitution correctly, with 2013 in conjunction with 2014, one would think where 2014 says that if Parliament is not in session within 7 days of such employment, the committee must be informed. The implication surely means also that within 7 days, Parliament should be informed, which isn't happening. And this is from a layman's point of view. But one would like to receive a legal opinion regarding that. And the other problem which Mr. Shah mentioned, which is quite correct, is we are not saying that the President, in informing Parliament, is not doing what the Constitution says. We've got a problem maybe with the time lag. But if Parliament is only informed, the question, and this is the other question which we are raising, what is the function of Parliament? We don't have any say, we're just being informed and we must approve. As far as the separation of powers, etc., we would like a legal opinion regarding that as well. So we are awaiting that, and we will follow the suggestions which were made, which I presume are unanimous, then write to the Speaker and the Chair of the NCOP, will be similar letters, just like this one, just to ask if there have been any developments, and that the committee just expresses concern that we haven't received a reply. I will be very diplomatic as far as that is concerned.
Yes, Chair, I appreciate that. I would propose that whilst the Speaker would be assisting the committee to sort that legal opinion, I think the committee has also its own right to sort for a constitutional expert to provide us with an opinion on that particular clause. I'm saying this because if in the future there needs to be a constitutional amendment, there's no other person going to pick up on that except ourselves. So it is important because here we talk about the role of Parliament. If the role of Parliament is going to be diminished because of that interpretation, where the President, because our President would simply say, well, the Constitution says so, unless you come up and say something else, I'll agree to that. But the Constitution, if we're interpreting the Constitution as is, the President, we cannot hold the President accountable, because it's the Constitution that says so. The President would simply say, I've done what I'm supposed to have done. by simply informing Parliament as to what I've done. Now, you're quite correct. Here we're talking about, as much as we intend, Manik, to visit, I mean, that is the Burundi, you know, and other countries where our soldiers are deployed. They are deployed by the president, not by us, but by the president. We'll be doing that kind of an oversight. Now, there is something that's missing, that we do. The link, there's a missing link between Parliament and the president when we talk about the approval of such deployment. Now, it is our committee that must begin to pick up on that particular debate. Because even the speaker, as we have written to the speaker, what are we saying? The letters, as we have written them to the speaker, sorting this. But what are we saying? We have also to express our opinion to the speaker so that she can then begin to engage on the deliberation. I appreciate what is contained in the letter because we have raised our concerns. So if we have this legal opinion, then we can firm our position to then say to the speaker, this is the position of the portfolio committee. Further to that, there is an administrative problem from the office of the president, which I then think also our letter to the speaker is directly talking to that. I think we've been modest to say there's a problem with the administration in the office of the president in communicating such. Now, let's get to Parliament. Let's put the portfolio committee aside, that is the joint aside. And look, when Parliament had to ATC this only yesterday, I'm talking about Parliament. When did it reach Parliament? Why is it only ATC'd yesterday? So it then suggests that, with due respect to whoever.
Why is it due respect?
To whoever. Yeah. Chairperson, I feel that once again, both committees, the portfolio committee and the joint, what would be the best English word to use here?
Don't use due respect.
No, it's due respect because the word that I intend to use could be a little bit heavy. I'm a bit concerned. We have written a letter to the office of the speaker. Up to this very date, we have not received a response letter.
On the 18th of June.
I mean, this is serious business. If we had put this as a question, sure, I would have done that long ago. And they were going to respond immediately to it. Now, we have written to the speaker sorting and wanting an opinion, particularly on this matter. Once we have written the letter, the president, once again, is continuing on the other side. I'm running short of saying there is some form of undermining somewhere, with due respect. That is why I didn't know I wanted to say this. No, I'm saying on both because currently we are confronted with challenging issues within defense.
Yeah.
That's the reason why. And time and again, you find that issues of defense are always, you know, well, I mean, what's there about defense anyway? We are secured. There are matters that are too important that we have to begin to deal with. But these are just normal issues. These are not normal issues, with due respect. So I'm then saying, I'm also raising that concern, Chairperson, to then say, we have to look into that. But let's get this legal opinion. Let's express our viewpoint to the speaker, to then say, this is the position that we want this particular process to begin to follow, because this is not acceptable. Starting from the day, from the office of the president, parliament, or blaming also ourselves. But at the end of it all, it's not correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bengo. Yeah, with
with due respect. Now, to add fuel to the flame, which might upset our committee even more, and I didn't furnish you with a copy of a previous letter, which was written. I've got a copy, but it was written, I think, the end of last year, where a meeting was requested between the speaker and the two chairs of the committee, which we haven't received any response on. So this is problematic. This is really problematic. I see Mr. Fischler, but I think Dr. Beko hasn't had an opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm covered. I just want to say that the question of the legal opinion, I think, is very important, so that we move from the premise, you know, of authority and the information. I also observe that I don't remember that. Everybody laughing at me. Whatever that.
No, is this young man when he says he has to speak? I don't know. He's your supporter.
I like your voice.
No, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, please protect me from young people.
Now, please, everyone, take care of the chair.
You see, now I've lost the trend of my thoughts.
Go.
This young man. No, I was saying that I'm not aware, for instance, I mean, coming to this whole principle now, that's why I think I support the question of the legal opinion. And then, of course, that I think there's a principle involved here. I don't know whether Parliament has been informed when, for instance, there was deployment of troops in Burundi or anywhere, even outside the country. If the Parliament has been informed, fine. But I'm even wondering whether this has been happening, and therefore this is why I think that this committee must begin to do its work of oversight. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Baker. Before I see Mr. Ndili and Mr. Fischler, Parliament has been informed about all the deployments in all the countries. And I think that as far as the issue of obtaining a separate legal opinion, let's get that off the table as well. I think there's a broad agreement that our committee secretary will then obtain a separate legal opinion, which we can take forward from this committee. Thank you. Mr. Fischler and then Mr. Ndudi.
Yeah. You know, Chair, Comrade Deng reminded me of something that once happened to me. You know, the question of undermining and of undermining the department itself. One time, I wrote a letter to the Speaker of Parliament requesting her to come to Port Elizabeth to address the meeting. She did not come. And so disappointed, I went to her, confronted her. I asked her why she did not come to our meeting when we had requested it. She said, no, that cannot happen. Never wrote a letter. I said, no, I'm sure I wrote a letter. We went together. I said, okay, let's go to the sector. We went straight to the sector. And we found that the letter, 9 minutes, never responded. So that what I'm trying to say is that we need to make a follow-up. Write a letter, follow-up. It's a question of undermining. Where does this come from? Just put it in another. So there is your husband.
File number 38.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Continue.
No, thanks, Jefferson.
Put your mic on.
No, thanks, Jefferson. I also want to start the way I learned that almost everybody started by paying his condolences to the late, you know, Secretary Kotikan. Thank you. You know, comrade, on this one, the subject where we just come from, on the deployment, indeed the president, you know, they do inform us. But I hear the question coming from Chair, and it represents my interest squarely. That's why when the Honorable Ndade was saying covered, I was actually loudly saying I'm covered. Because the question is saying, what we should, it's one thing to look for an opinion, but it's another thing for members of parliament to decide what they want. And I heard the Honorable Shah saying, mere information and all that, but we want something more, like you are saying, but that is what we must go and discuss and as parties. That's my appeal, that maybe we should just put it up. Let's go and discuss as parties to say, exactly, do we want, because it's oversight, you know, it's oversight, yes, we're informed, but I heard there's this challenge of saying, it's oversized, but it's not enough. Actually, we want to, it's like, we want to have a say where the forces must go to place A or to place B. Now, you are quite aware that then is going to be touching on the Constitution. That's what I'm, on the only emphasis I'm saying, which I agree with members, that let's go and think thorough on this matter. Now, it's not, because it's one thing, you'll get an advice, legal advice, not an issue. But an issue of us now, what we want, do we really want to go to that level where the other member Shah is saying, so that we become conscious about it, and when we come back, so that this item, maybe we can pack it, and then we should come back to it, it can be noted, so that we say we have now consulted, we have checked country A, B, C. They are effective because they are doing like 1, 2, 3, so that we are able to have at least some living examples, and we go into a firm thing so that it mustn't be a thing that like we're doing it later. That's why I'm saying I'm fully covered.
Thank you. Mr. Turi, before Mr. Lover and Mr. Shah, I think this whole issue is very important. And that is also why from this committee we asked to be informed regarding the whole process. Where does it start? Does it start with Foreign Affairs, who consults with Department of Defense, who then advises Cabinet, and then the Presidency writes a letter? In my mind, this could be the process. But we've also asked, and our Secretary has already approached Department of Foreign Affairs and Defense, all these relevant departments, to come to our next meeting so that they can inform us how the process works. And I think this is also going to give us clarity what we actually want. And in the party positions, Mr. Ntuli is quite right. Each party can then consider what their position is, because if we want a change of the constitution, that's also not a simple process, as we know. So those are the issues which is on the table at the moment, which we will try and resolve as soon as possible. I see Ms. Daniels, but first Mr. Jorver, and then Mr. Shah, and then Ms. Daniels.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think I didn't know that this debate would take a long time. I thought that we're going to finalize it quickly. But there were issues that were raised by the comments of the Chairperson. Now, when you are requested to seek the naked opinion, Chairperson. Can the definition of information be clarified? Because it seems as if the president will say, as Mr. Beg was saying, I've done what I'm supposed to do. I have informed you. When and how, it doesn't say when. It only says when the parliament is in session or 7 days after the deployment, but to inform you. Now, the definition of information, informing you. Does that informing you give any power to say yes or no? That's another matter that should be acquired. Because if you say I must inform you that I will kill you tomorrow, does it say that you must now go against me or try to get a lawyer or try to get a bodyguard to present to safeguard your life and so on? Those are the things that you should know about if you ask you. And I will request, Chairperson, that if you have done your follow up to the speaker and then get a legal opinion, then we can go to foreign affairs with something on our hands. Because we mustn't call them before we know exactly our position. Because at this moment in time, it seems as if we are all doubting ourselves. But the Constitution, as far as the Constitution is saying the President will inform us. Only what you are worried about is the time frame of the information. Only one time frame that is there. So 7 days, and when the Parliament is in session, only. What the information is all about, how, what powers do you have, and lastly, Chairperson, before you close this matter, Mr. Bengu raised a very, very, very tangible question. If you go on oversight to Burundi, to do what? To check on what? To check on people that have been deployed by the President on behalf of the President or on behalf of yourself. If it's on behalf of the President, has he asked you to do so? The answer is no. We are just doing an oversight to the South African National Defense Force as a committee that's supposed to do that. Do you have the powers to do so? The answer is yes. Where are those powers? Where are those powers? No. No, it's a constitutional matter. Where are those powers? Because those powers say you are a power to be informed of the deployment in Burundi. I'm making an example, Chairperson. Yeah. A power to be deployed and power to be told that soldiers are deployed in Burundi. Do you have the powers to follow the deployment up to Burundi? Does that information that I gave you the power to follow what I've done, what I have done as a president? You understand what I'm trying to say? In other words, I'm saying I've deployed you, Mr. Schoeman, to go and do something. But has Ms. Daniels have a power to follow what I've done? Because I've just informed her that I have deployed you there. Does she have a power to do so? That is why I'm questioning the information now. The information thing must be cleared in a manner that we know where do we stand. If you say a person is informing somebody to do what and for what good reason, at the end you say yeah or nay. If you say yes, how can we say yes in July, in August, when the thing is done in June and July? Something like that. Those are the tricky things that I'm trying to ask myself after listening to the chairperson. It adds a lot of things. But as long as we are going to ask for clarity and seek opinion, ask for the opinion of information. What does inform mean? Does it mean powers to do what? Or informing on what basis? Just information? It doesn't have any time frame, it doesn't do anything, because it's a commander-in-chief, what does it mean, really?
and then maybe you are going to get exactly what we are looking at. So that we position ourselves in order that when we request the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Defense, we know exactly where our position is. We mustn't be 10 fools here in front of them when we discuss this matter. Thank you, Shepherd. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zorba. I think very interesting point. I mean, if we go, do we oversight the Defense Force or do we oversight the President?
That's
because the Defense Force didn't deploy them. They were just an instrument.
Yeah, that's my question.
And if we will ask for a legal opinion, but we will also get the legal person at our next meeting to respond to these kind of very pertinent questions. Mr. Shah and then Ms. Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. When Section 201 please says, Section 2, the President must inform Parliament promptly. As the Honourable Lobo was saying, inform and the arguments that he made, we can also similarly seek the interpretation of promptly. Are you saying promptly could mean prior to deployment? When a decision is taken to deploy, then Parliament must be informed promptly. That could refer to being, to promptly could refer to prior to deployment. But whatever arguments we make, Chairperson, the Parliament is the people's Parliament. If the people are not happy, suppose tomorrow the President decides, it doesn't matter which political party, it could be, you can laugh about this, even if it is the DA president, for God's sake, it's the People's Parliament. If he decides suddenly he wants to deploy troops in support of some power occupying some place somewhere, he could do so. But if the people are not happy, the people, we represent the people in the House. So today you might have a good president, and tomorrow you might have a president with another agenda, and he decides to deploy to Somalia, and the people say, but Somalia, the security situation is no good, we cannot afford to do this, it's too dangerous. Can the Defense Committee articulate the views of Parliament in extension the views of the people? No. We will simply say, sorry, we can't do anything because the President has decided. So how are the people, if we say it's the People's Parliament, how are they involved in this decision making? So whichever way you look at it, even if it means having to revisit this constitutional matter, I think it is in the interest of the country, the interest of people, of all the people in this country, really, seriously. Because as it stands, the President can deploy to anywhere without explaining his commander-in-chief. But is it not ironical that we say to them, this is your budget, they come to us for the money, but then they can go and do what they want with the money. And they can go and buy what they want without a problem, you know? So, I think I would ideally like to see a committee which has teeth, you know. The UN says we want to deploy, right? We'll have to speak to my parliament. The President makes the request, foreign affairs, whatever, they put it together, comes to parliament, we debate it in the parliament. If Parliament thinks it's good for that deployment, then we will say yes. If we say no, that is oversight. That is power. That's authority of Parliament. As far as this is really a joke.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Ms. Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. The financial implications, Chair. Because I believe defense has to pop out something out of that. Out of the very budget that we don't have as defense. And finance or treasury, or rather, who foots the bill? And if treasury, does it happen there and then? Because I recall the question of defense footing the bill and when they're supposed to be reimbursed, it becomes a problem. That also we need to follow it up, Chair, because there's a lot at stake here for us at the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fisher, I just wanted to make another point.
Mm-hmm.
If you read, I don't know whether you not understand English. If you read D, the period for which the force is expected to be employed is expected. Now, which means that he informs Parliament that they will be deploying the army soon. He informs Parliament that, because we say, is expected to be employed. Not after deployment, but is expected to be deployed. I think that's why we need the legal opinion on that.
Now, the implication is also that Parliament be informed before such employment. I think as far as the financial implications are concerned, again, it's not mentioned in the Constitution. So that's why we're not given any idea what the costs are going to be and who foots the bill. And it is very important out of whose budget comes such expenses. I think the department mentioned that as far as the Lesotho exercise is concerned, which Foreign Affairs requested, that money never came back. So the department was never reimbursed as far as that employment is concerned. We've debated this quite thoroughly. I wrote a letter on the 7th of November last year. I'll just quote excerpts. 2007. At the most recent meeting of the relevant parliamentary committees, I wrote on behalf of both committees, certain concerns were expressed regarding these letters. These concerns were the process of tabling such letters, then referring it to the relevant committees, which in turn reports back to Parliament, would seem an unnecessarily long and cumbersome process. Often these deployments have been completed before the parliamentary process has been finalized. It is also not clear what the role and the responsibility of Parliament is when such letters are tabled. Does Parliament in fact act as a rubber stamp, but in effect accept full financial moral and other related responsibilities emanating from such deployments? This is the letter which I requested a meeting of the two chairs, as well as Joshi Mukwena, who is the chair of the Select Committee in the NCOP. We have received no response. Thank you. I think we will obtain the legal opinion. We will act according to all the suggestions which were made. And
how are you going to do the follow-up?
I'm not extending the discussion. I'm just asking you, Chair, how are you going to do the follow-up to the Speaker? Because of that letter you just wrote and there was no response to you. How are we going to do the follow-up now? Are you going to do the follow-up by phone or by writing or by what? Because it's important now to know in order to safeguard you that because there are things, as you are saying, 513, that the people say wherever they come from, they put it underneath and so on. How are you going to do it? What proposals do you have in your mind because of what really has happened? Because that's where my problem lies now. If you have written a letter in November, and towards November now, we haven't had a thing about it and so on, is that how the civil servant should work? In the office? In our offices? No.
Thank you. I think the root, and I'm in your hands, I will contact the Secretary of the Speaker by phone, personally. I don't think the route would be to write another letter and just mention these two letters and request
a response regarding these two letters?
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
I think that's a good route to take. But once again, you have to have a record.
Yes, definitely.
Here we please find copies of the letters that have been sent on a given date where you have not received a cadence of the reply from the office of the speaker. Da 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 da. When you
after the conversation and the phone and so on.
No, no. No, no, no. You go straight to the office with the letter and meet that person. The letter.
Yeah. By hand.
The letters that you are referring to are attached.
Yes.
If need be, secure a meeting with the speaker there in the office.
Yeah.
And she must give you the time. It normally works there, Chairperson. It normally works. It's the letter, right? So that even if you meet with the speaker, you simply say, here is the letter. This is what I'm referring to. I think it's a question of just getting into the office, find a time, you'll be there. Even if she says the speaker is busy, you simply ask for 5 minutes. She's going to give you 5 minutes. I think that's the best way to work around it. So that if the problem lies with the secretary, then it must be known. Because I won't believe that the speaker is not attending to these issues, because the speaker normally refers issues. If a letter is there, the speaker will refer, and then he will always expect her legal people or whoever is in the office to respond to her on those specific issues. It's a reflection, for me, it's a reflection that something administrative is very wrong within the office of the speaker. It's not the speaker, but it's the people who are speakers at the office.
Thank you, Mr. Bengo. I will follow your advice with your approval. One is always careful not to be presumptuous when dealing with higher authority. I think this would be the correct route to follow.
Of course.
Thank you very much. If there's no further discussion, no more hands, I would like to thank you all for your contribution and your attendance. I really appreciate it. And I do trust that at our next meeting, we will have a similar constructive discussion and a meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned. Actually, the meeting is adjourned, but Dr. Pego just wanted to say something.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to take anybody back, but this is in connection with the Secretary for Defense. I understand from the media that there's going to be a funeral. I think it was Saturday. So I wanted to know if